Greetings to everyone and welcome back to The Voice of Daniel, and you're listening to the podcast of the sports scientist NIMS. And I think I'm very excited today because I've kept my promise of coming back and doing the exact same thing that I wanted to do a week ago. I decided that I have to do this podcast the next week, so which I decided the last week, and now I'm doing it on time and I'm very proud of myself. All right, so what is today's topic? Well, this falls under physiology and strength and conditioning. So the topic would be blood flow restriction training. It's kind of light, but then psychologically heavy, but I generally don't know if I should put it in physiology or psychology or SNC, but I'm just putting it in common podcast season, so let's get in. Blood flow restriction training, light but heavy. It dates back to a few centuries, but is being extensively exploited only recently. Feels good and promising. Well, yes, it is a bit crude in its presentable form and certainly has few demerits. Let's just swish through them, alright? Blood flow restriction training, or BFR training in simple terms, is that this is a training method which involves partially restricting the arterial inflow and fully restricting the venous outflow in a working musculature during a particular exercise. A method that combines low intensity training and blood occlusion techniques. The pressure is often produced with a pneumatic cuff compressing the musculature around the area of interest, that is the musculature during predominantly used during the workout. The idea, well, is to stop the blood flow and thus cut oxygen and allow pooling of blood, and then exploit the blood pooling effect onto the hypertrophy and strength gains. Of course, this is a one-liner which would make absolutely no sense until you go through the podcast completely. It was earlier known as katsu training in Japanese language. It actually meant training with added pressure. Katsu training is now performed all over the world and is more commonly referred to as the BFR training. The benefits of BFR training is highly on par with both aerobic and anaerobic exercises. The recent utilities have, however, predominantly said, or its utilities have been used in the scenes of bodybuilding. Many trainers have claimed that hypertrophy results are much more defined, easier, and significantly well seen with the use of BFR techniques. This claim has also been proved with sciences and experiments. By tradition, when you talk about resistance training or let's say weightlifting sessions and stuff, researchers have found that a person must lift at least 65% of their 1 RM. 1 RM essentially means one repetition maximum. One repetition maximum is defined as the maximum amount of load an individual can lift, and he can lift that only once. So yeah, the scientists have told that the person should lift at least 65% of their 1 RM to create appreciable hypertrophy gains. Interestingly, in the year 2000, a study by Takarada have concluded that if one was to train under the restricted guidelines of BFR training principles, he could use loads as low as 20 to 30% of their 1 RM and still can create an identical hypertrophy stimulus as depicted in any traditional exercise, that is to train the individual with 65% of his 1 RM. This technique works seamlessly not only for muscle gain but also for muscular strength. Not quite higher than the HIIT strength gains. HIIT means high intensity interval training. So well, of course BFR is not that stronger than that of HIIT strength gains, but then it can be used in alternating schedules to have a benefit over the effects of progressive overloading and also acclimatization to workloads. Another amazing work of our BFR training is that they help in recovery as well. Controlling blood flow pooling blood and releasing the gush has some advanced mechanisms that promotes in injury recovery and facilitates the athlete's return to play criteria. Almost the same thing happens when you do cryotherapy as well. So when you do cryotherapy, peripheral vasoconstriction occurs, and then followed by vasodilation, blood pooling occurs and thus improvises muscle recovery. Well, what is the physiology behind BFR in muscle building? So how this whole process of muscle building is happening? How is this happening? What are the attributions that this technique, that's blood flow restriction training, what are the attributes that it purports to hold in? Well, muscular gain can be simplified in a logical formula. Muscle gain is equal to the muscle protein synthesis minus muscle protein breakdown. Even from a commonest perspective, it's very logical that if the protein synthesis is more than the protein breakdown, muscular hypertrophy occurs. Simple. With BFR training, the muscular damages as a result of training load and training volume is significantly reduced. With traditional exercise patterns, heavy loads stretches the sarcomeres and as a result damages the muscle matrix. This causes elevated levels of enzymes such as creatine kinase, lipid peroxidases, myoglobin, lactate dehydrogenase, and thus prolongs and prolongates the period of delayed onset of the muscle soreness, DOMS. However, with current technique in discussion, the levels of these enzymes are statistically very low. Research has been done, it's been studied, it's been proved that these enzymes are statistically very low in comparison. This can be contributed to the mechanism of response to the training and also to the very fact that this method requires a very small percentage of 1RM for the results. This means that BFR training reduces the magnitude of muscle protein breakdown. So we won at one part of the equation, which is muscle gain equals muscle protein synthesis minus muscle protein breakdown. As the BFR training works by the idea of limited blood supply with increasing demand, the smaller, which is the type 1 muscle fibers, eventually stop working. This is when the larger fibers, that's the type 2 fibers, comes into rescue. With the type 2 fibers in action, the amount of lactic acid release is quite higher. It is well established that lactic acid levels are a predisposal to growth hormone release. This in turn would increase collagen synthesis. So it not only improves the muscle growth, but also aids in recovery in this way. BFR training has also shown a great positive effect on myostatin and IGF-1 levels. With aerobic exercise and training, the BFR technique has shown to increase the performance by improving the VO2 max scores. It has also been claimed that the aerobic adaptations are more compatible with BFR as it depicts an acute upregulation of protein signaling. What are its insightful demerits then? Obviously, there should be some, as I said earlier. Well, these includes possible muscle damage as a result of improper cuffing process and the crude nature of the technique by itself. Well, the latter part is quite perceivable. Though the athlete has to train less loads, not many would love to be strapped upon and tortured. I mean, the pressure cuffs and the reps against the pressure. Nevertheless, the satisfying feeling of the blood gushing after you remove the pressure cuff is actually all worth for, I guess. Muscle damage can occur with this technique, but are not in high values. It can activate stretch-activated calcium channels and increase the intercellular calcium levels. These can impair the integrity of the sarcomeres and thus reducing the muscular power output. So the whole concept of increasing loads is now understood. The pressure level should be designed with utmost care and precise calculations. If done otherwise, it can lead to ischemic reperfusion injuries. Other considerable factors to focus would include release of reactive oxygen species, it can cause thromboembolism as a result of chronic use. It is also quite essential to monitor the individual adaptations and responses to cardiovascular, peripheral and central responses to BFR training. Okay, enough with the physiology and merits and demerits. Let's say, how practical is it in sports? What are its potential in sports? Well, though the long-term effects are pretty unclear and not widely appreciated, analyzed, or even accepted, blood flow restriction technique comes quite in handy with the following perspectives. Can be used in bodybuilding. Why? Because it produces results in much quicker time frame and also reduces the workload with respect to the percentage of one RM used. This might help in reducing the incidence of overload-induced muscular damage and tears. It can also be highly efficient in sports that involve type 2 muscle fiber recruitment. Essentially, it can be used for power events such as weightlifting, boxing, American football, etc. Quite potential in aerobic events as well. As discussed earlier, it is said and even scientifically proven to increase the VO2 max levels. However, I do not understand the study design or even the very idea of BFR and very idea of the relationship between BFR and increase in VO2 max from the study, but the study did conclude that they did promote VO2 max levels. Since this method persistently trains the type 2 muscle fibers, it can also be used for sprint training regimes and other quick speed fiber involvement techniques. Possesses a distinctive utility in recovery and injury healing aspects as well. Blood flow restriction exercises can be used in various formats and regimes, but it's very important to keep in mind that though efficient, it needs to be done with a serious and appropriate application knowledge. A lot of studies affirm that BFR training depicts adapted benefits in runners, that is, improved VO2 max scores. However, according to me, I would question the area of cuffing and its relationship to the cardiac efficacies. Because to me, with my level of understanding and experience, I feel VO2 max is highly related to cardiac function rather than musculature. Obviously, we cannot cuff the heart. Sounds crazy to me, at least. I do not have any understanding with the studies which claims cuffing legs while running improves VO2 max. As in, yeah, of course, it would improvise the musculature around the legs, but how does it promote the VO2 max? If someone knows, I request you all to put in your idea or opinions in the forum page about the effects of BFR in improvising VO2 max. I personally need an understanding of how it affects the VO2 max scores. I've done my research. I tried finding any answers, but genuinely speaking, I couldn't understand. So if anyone else could explain it better, it would be very grateful. I would be very grateful. Well, all right, let's finish off. I am almost at the end, and as always, I would just like to end my podcast saying that when to use and how to use BFR is highly individualized and opinion based. To put it in a nutshell, not every day nor every instance is a terrain to train on. So think about it, have a wide knowledge on where you're going to use it, how comfortable is your athlete on that, and then try applying it. Well, on that end note, I also want to convey happy news to you guys that we are now a team. There are two more sports scientists, young sports scientists. They have joined in to the community. This is very exciting, and I would also request suggest you guys to join in the community as if you are a sports scientist or anywhere related to science, sports, common area of interest. The thing is, together things get bigger and more useful to the globe. So yeah, that was a very happy news I wanted to share with everyone. And yes, I'm trying to improvise my styles and stuff. I'm getting loads of emails that says me to do some changes, and I'm trying to do them if they are into my style. Thank you for everything. And yes, please do subscribe to the blog. I've given the link in the description of the podcast, and you can click onto the website and then go and read these for yourselves for better pictorial representations as well. And you are listening to the Sports Scientist Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy. Bye-bye. This is Daniel signing off. Take care.